Awesome to welcome Grambling State University head coach Patrick Crary to the basketball podcast. Crary, you've reignited the FAMU men's basketball program, exceeding expectations and guiding the Rattlers to the SWAC basketball tournament for the first time since 2022. He led the Rattlers to a 13-6 overall record and 10-8 mark in conference play. He also coached Sterling Young, who was named the SWAC Men's Basketball Player of the Year. Prior to coaching at FAMU, he served as head coach at St. Thomas University for 3 years, posting a 61-27 record with two consecutive NAIA tournament appearances and three straight winning seasons. His coaching journey has taken him from assistant roles at La Sierra University to head coaching stints at Washington Adventist University, St. Thomas University, Florida A&M. His track record of success includes multiple championships and accolades, including the 2014 USCAA Men's Division I National Championship, conference titles, and six NAIA National Tournament appearances. He has guided six teams to 20-plus win seasons, earning Coach of the Year honors in both the ICAA and Sun Conference. Hey, Coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. If you watch a lot of basketball game video like we do, you always see things you'd like to remember or share. Being able to capture, organize, retrieve, and share plays, sets, and actions with a playbook for your coaching staff and players will make your teams and overall programs that much better. Hoopsalytics now includes an integrated playbook organizer that can do the following for you. Add plays, including text descriptions, diagrams, other images, and videos from just about anywhere. Link to real-life examples of these plays from your game videos. Categorize playbook entries as plays, actions, drills, moves, and other categories. Add attributes for different entries like man, zone, needed to, etc. Star entries to feature for a team like things to learn before a practice. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free. Coach Crary, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Hey, exciting to talk to you. I know we're going to get into your journey a little bit throughout the podcast because it helps frame who you are and where you're at. But pretty cool. From where you started to where you are now, got to be excited to be at Grambling.
Very excited to be at Grambling. It's been quite a journey. I've only been a head coach for, what is it now? This is my 15th year being a head coach, but still only 41. So excited about this new chapter.
Well, and it speaks to the value sometimes of starting at a lower level and being a head coach and learning all it takes to be a successful head coach while you're head coaching.
Yeah, you learn how to do everything coming from the NAI level. From the NAI, like any level, has tiers, the power conferences and the low levels. And I came from very low level. And that experience really molded me, shaped me, and put me in a position now to have some success at Grambling.
One of the things you shared with me, and I love this phrasing, so I want you to dive into a little bit for us, is this concept of relationships, then championships. Can you help frame that for us?
Yeah, it's all about the relationship, and it starts with your players. I think that's the biggest one I learned is players have changed over time. Just the complexities of relationships are different now. Some of them might be a little more transactional. Sometimes kids want you to really be involved, and so you got to respect each relationship and framework them all as being different. All of them won't be the same. But then the relationship you have with your administration, your staff that you have, also your athletic director and your president, those relationships really align together are what championship programs are really all about. So I'm blessed to be at Grambling and start off with a great administration and ready to hit the ground running.
A great example right now. So maybe you can give us some practical examples of how you're forming relationships with the players and with the administration, because again, a whole bunch of people you need to meet on campus as well.
Yeah, I'll start with Grambling. Their pursuit of me was just very aggressive. I mean, their AD was very aggressive and that he wanted me to come to Grambling and he wanted to hire me and the vision he had for the program. And then their president was the same. I didn't really, for lack of better words, have to sell myself. They wanted me bad. First time really dealing with something like that in that area where it was that aggressive from that many people. Very humbling experience, but it's helped me along the way and it's helped me build these relationships early. The ones with our players, I'm very hands-on recruiting. I don't know. I'll put it on my hand the number of guys that I've been the second guy to talk to when it comes to recruiting players on any team I've coached. So I'm usually the first person to reach out, usually on the ground level with them, and telling them exactly how I am, the good things about me, the things that I'm working on, and then every situation that we're working in, the things about the school, and really getting involved with them and then whoever's advising them. Nowadays, I would say 10 years ago, I was talking to a mom and dad, and today you're probably going to talk to that agent first. So I'm just building that relationship with those agents as well, which is huge. I think a lot of us coaches on the college level pushed away from that early just because we didn't have to, for so long. But it's part of the business now. It's a lot of good agents and a lot of really good people out there that you can learn from and meet as well. So relationships are the key to life, the ones with our family, my wife, our kids, everything with that, and my mom and my dad, God, and relationships are key to whatever we really want in this life.
You've done a great job creating relationships. It's so cool to hear that they pursued you. That's got to be a great feeling in coaching and to be seen for what you've done. And I know you're going to get on to getting more done here, but let's talk a little bit first about maybe your offensive philosophy, which we'll start with one of your quotes, which is defense wins games, but offense gets you on the team. So talk to us maybe first about the offensive side about that, and then we'll go into defense later.
Yeah, early in my career, I wanted to be an offensive guy, but the numbers said I was a defensive guy. And we won a lot of games, so I can't really complain about that. But there's just something about offense that is just so fun, innovating, especially the way the game is going. I think my eyes really got open. I did NBA Summer League with the Spurs, Wemby's here. So I want to say that was 2023 summer. I was with them for 4 weeks and just seeing how much they poured into analytics and data. I had done it the year before. At St. Thomas, we had led the nation in threes made, threes attempted, very high in pace, top 10 in a bunch of different categories, had the number one and number two 3-point shooter in the country on the same team. We were already moving in that direction, but sitting down with the Spurs brass and talking to Bruce Brown, to Coach Brown, and that was just crazy, just the whole experience dealing with everybody with the organization. For me, it's really about the offensive skill set. How does it work with what we're doing? Of course, shooting is the primary purpose. When you're looking two through four to me, two, three, four, I'm always going to look at your shooting first and then everything else after that. I've learned very quickly on the Division I level how much length matters, athletic ability, just size. You can even have probably a little less athletic ability, but if you have that length and that size to go along with your skill, it'll help you along the way. And for me, offense is really key. We were number one last year at KenPom in our conference in 3-point percentage, 3-point makes, 3-point attempts. Number one in 2-point percentage via KenPom, number two in offensive rating in our league. And we also had the number one schedule in the league non-conference and the number one schedule in the league in conference. So we played against pretty hard people. We had a lot of success. We also had the newcomer of the year and the player of the year in the SWAC last year. And I think all that really comes back down to a lot of the fundamental philosophies I have just on the offensive end, taking a lot of different coaches and blending it together.
Let's go into those fundamental philosophies, but maybe first let's start with what was one thing that was actionable from that experience for the Spurs that you could apply to your program?
It was really just how first how they treated their everybody. Like they treated the players first program. Like you're on the bus, you don't get up. I could be the first person on the bus. Head coach could be the first one on the bus. The players are in the back. You don't even get off of the bus until the players have all leave the bus. So just treating your players in an appropriate manner, I would say that would be the first thing. From a tactical piece on the offensive end, just understanding the time and score, pace. The 24-second shot clock is so different than 30. But you can get your actions in quick. And then from player development, just how they focused on non-front rim misses. They did a lot of drills that included if you missed a front rim, you didn't get a second shot. First time I ever saw that. A lot of spot work. We did a lot of intentional spot work, whether it was right corner, left corner, five out for the big man at the top of the key. Just very intentional in a short-term development way. I think it's very applicable to college. We have these guys for what, 7 months, 8 months? First month and a half, 2 months is really just development. So really working at spot work, telling guys this is where your shots are coming from, this is where you need to work on your game, and this is where you'll get better from an efficiency standpoint.
Love that. Love hearing about the Spurs. Obviously, they've done such a good job for such a long time. Awesome experience. And you referenced a little bit kind of your offensive fundamentals, your offensive principles that have led to that success that you referenced for us. So can you dive a little bit deeper for us? Maybe first in terms of how are you generating 3-point attempts? What are you doing in practice to be able to emphasize that and then be able to build on that?
First thing is we'll go 20-second shot clock a lot early, just to 14. I've done it, it's too fast. And so a 20-second shot clock to get us going. We'll do play run I got that from the Spurs as well. So we'll be doing a half court. We'll do a play. We'll come down and run, and then we'll come down and run again. No play calls on those other two. We've initially start off with 1 on 2 actions. If it's your action, it's the grenade. Like, I want to away from DHOs. DHOs are, to me, just so easily switchable. The grenade action, in terms of really getting into your guy or throwing it into the post for those uphill grenades, it really generates a level of separation, allows guys to get downhill or anticipate longer threes. We worked a lot of ghost actions, which we call shadow. It doesn't matter who you are or what level, it's a very difficult action to deal with. And then got from the Boston Celtics that tap action, where you're going to tap the guy and then short roll to the rim. It's really good for those versatile forwards. A lot of people think you're about to shadow or ghost the screen. You tap them, it gives them a different look, and the kids are able to read it very quickly. So we do everything starting off on those 2-on-2 actions to really get us going. So guard-to-guard actions would be a shadow tap to really get us moving, understanding that we're trying to play off of 2 feet for twos or a kick out for threes. So we had a lot of no mid-range early. Guys didn't like it. I got to massage how I moved that in there early on this next year. But Coach Driscoll's a really good friend of mine from this last year we played against. I was very happy for him and his opportunity. But really, we chart everything. So I know how many attempts we had, how many possessions we had. And I'll tell our guys that after the play run series. So, hey, we had 8 possessions in this play run. On these 8 possessions, we scored 9 points. So now we're at 1.1. And we've shot in 7 threes on the 9 possessions. Just so they can get a framework of working the numbers in their head. It's very different for guys, especially coming from high school or transfer, junior college. It could be a very different concept.
Can you go a little deeper with the tap action? I've heard it called touch, tap, all those things. But I do feel like that's one of the things that I think coaches in general can use a little bit more. But there's a little bit of fear sometimes that's going to get called a foul because of the push. And it's really not that, is it at all?
I don't think we got an offensive foul on a tap all year last year. I think guys want the ball so much that they don't want to do it. So they rather go up and ask for a DHO or shadow because they might get an open three. So with the tap, we identify guys to get the lower half of the defender that you can see. So if you're coming from to the right of the defender, if you can look at that lower left half, we teach them to put 2 hands on their waist or on their side, on their hip. Just tap and turn as fast as you can. Usually on the tap actions, I feel like we get more advantages going downhill off of grenades or off of shadow, off of ghost actions than we do off of the tap actions because it stuns the defender a little bit. And a lot of times our guards know if you miss that guy on the tap, it's going to be a problem. I want that tap with those forwards because now you're playing from the free throw line and you're probably 3-on-2, 2-on-1 at a good looking advantage. So now we teach our guys to go in there. Put 2 hands, really open back up to the ball. Don't turn your back so you can't see the ball. And we tell them don't stick as well. You cannot stick it. You just got to tap it and get out of it. And you can't float though. So that we make reads based upon the tape that we do, especially the second time around in the conference, but the first time around, like how are they guarding ball screens? Typically, how that's how they're going to guard the tap action. And if they're too deep, then you can tap them and roll a little further. If they're going to stun it really hard from that 5 man and really draw up higher, we tell them to tap it and stop so you can catch it and then get downhill a little quicker. Because the one issue that you can have is you can float. If you float, you anticipate you throw the ball. Now that low side defender can come and try to jump to action, which we had some problems with last year with turnovers.
I love it. I love the action. I think it can be used more. And if people want to watch Caruso when he sets ball screens for OKC, for example. He's really good at the touch tap and getting into the space, as you just mentioned there, to be able to play out of like short roll with a scorer or a passer that can make plays from there. Same concept of getting the ball to the middle of the zone to a player who can make plays.
Absolutely. I got it strictly from the Celtics, just what they did with Tatum and Brown. I've known Joe since Joe was coaching D2. Joe has done a fabulous job there. And so just seeing the advantage that they got, it was key for me. And so I really wanted our guys to be able to play without calls. That's our biggest thing. I don't really want to slow the game down. Already going to slow down enough when we get to conference play and the end of conference play and then championship league play. But early on, we really want them to go and just make those reads as fast as they can.
Talk to us about your discipline determines your destiny.
Yeah, my old assistant coach, Selwyn Phillips, who played overseas 13 years, I always say he's probably my favorite guy that I've worked with, just because he's held me accountable probably more than any other assistant. Just kept me upright, kept me straight. But he would always tell us that. He would always tell me that, always tell the team that. So it really comes down to the fact for how you show up for class, how you prioritize your time, how you get in the weight room, how you get into the practice gym, and how disciplined you are in practice determines how good you're going to be, period. And we've always tried to go back on that with our guys and really be honest with them and tell them teams that we may have come up short with. Not every team is going to win a championship, but every team doesn't deserve to win a championship. Sometimes you have those teams where your discipline just was not there for a while, and you bring that up to them possibly at the end of the year for guys that you have coming back, leaders, guys that might move on. And no matter what you're doing in this life, if you are not disciplined in it, your destiny is going to suffer. It's not really about what you have or what is thrown at you. It's about how hard you're doing it and what regularity you're doing it with and your discipline level. So we try to teach our guys that on a daily basis to try to get them where they need to be.
And then the other part that goes with this, we talked a little bit about offense and you creating pace and creating shots, but there's obviously a defensive component. So talk to us about how you blend your defensive concepts with your offensive concepts.
First, we've struggled in terms of turning people over. We're always good, top four or five in the league in terms of percentages, and we're very scout-oriented defense. This year, we'll be making a lot of changes just because just looking at the best defenses that there are, they always create turnovers. And whether it's OKC right now, whether it's Houston, with their level of physicality, you're going to create turnovers. And so I have a very NBA approach just in how we do things. A lot of times that can deal with containment or not being overly aggressive, just in the way you approach the game. The college game is very different, though. So adjusting to the Division I game and the college game, we have been a keep your guy in front of you. We've blended pack line. We never have been overly up the line. Just have not done that. Always stayed within the line. You'll be surprised. Guys just don't run that much stuff. So you're able to really scout out actions and really have success with it. But the miscellaneous plays have hurt us. I think they've hurt us in the past. And it might be a 50-50 ball here or a breakdown of a shot clock. What are you doing in the last 10 seconds in that mayday situation? From a defensive perspective, we've really been able to help ourselves with our pace. So last year, we had all those top categories in the league. But just because of our depth, we were only seventh in pace. So I didn't let us play frantic just because we were a very good offensive efficiency team. To protect our defense and our depth, our pace was a little down. But I do think it helped us in terms of our numbers with our defensive efficiency rating. So for this year, the changes in defense for me really will be about being more athletic and generating more turnovers.
It sounds like what's hard to guard for you are the things that you're running on offense, which are a little bit more conceptual, right? It's like these things that are a little bit less structured. You reference coaches not running as many plays as you think, and you can take them out of those plays, and then it becomes defending play after the play type of stuff. So talk to us about how do you structure your practice to be able to work on defending those type of situations? You mentioned being more physical going into this year. What are some other things that you do defensively in practice to be able to get better in those situations?
First thing we do at practice every day is ball screen reads, and we're going to break down our opponents. So let's on the SWAC, we play Saturday and Monday. So let's say we're playing, now it's Alabama A&M. They're going to do a lot of icing, just very different than most teams in the league. And then after that, we're going to play against a Texas Southern, which is going to give us a flat hedge. And so we're going to go over both film of both teams, say, hey, look, first we're going to say, hey, we're going to have a TV on the court. We bring the TV on the court every day, and we do film every day. But the TV's on the court. We go to the TV first. I say, hey, look, this is how Texas Southern does their flat ball screen hedge. This is where the rotation is coming from. These are three different angles. These are three different people. They look at it, boom. And from an offensive perspective, we go in there and we attack it. This is how we do it. Oh, good job. We'll go 12 possessions. We'll chart the 12 possessions, and we'll have it on the board. Big whiteboard. Turnover. Score. Miss layup, like miss, and I'm okay with like in practice misses on good possessions, like great read miss, still a positive. So we'll chart all of those and then let them know what their PPP is after it, and then let them know who did well, who didn't do well, where we struggled. So it's really real time data with them, so they can see what's really going, Everybody wants to look at the stat sheet, but they don't want to really look at the data. Those are two different things. And so on the flip side, we do the same thing for the defense. So we'll come back and then show our ball screen coverage. So last year, just with the bigs that we had, they were very big, 6'10", 6'11", but they did a really good job in their hedges. They were much better with a hard hedge than they were with a drop. So we were hard hedging last year. We would show our hard hedge coverage, our flat hedge coverage, what we did well against the opponent, what we did bad. We would then go back on our rotations. And I think the one thing coaches, we really don't understand is that players really want to get smarter. And the part of the game that they really want to get better at is reading the ball screens, because they know that no matter where they go, no matter what level they're in, no matter how high they go professionally, they're going to have to get better on the ball screens. And everybody wants to ball anyway. Everybody wants to ball. Generating those reads and becoming a more unselfish team, it makes your team want to be more unselfish and play together. Just because they selfishly want to get better at reads, it makes your team a more unselfish team. It's just something that we did last year that was really major for us in our big stretch run when we won 10 out of 11 games in the league. It really came down to us breaking down the ball screen coverage heavily and then giving our guys the autonomy to talk. Hey, coach, what about this? I didn't see that, or I missed that guy. I got to do this. Hey, can you go back and run that film again so I can see it again? Giving those guys that ability really showed, how much they wanted to learn and how much it really helped our team grow.
I love connecting that player development, team development, those things connected there in terms of that, but also future possibilities for certain players as well. So I'm imagining that they get opportunities to develop in different positions as well, a little bit relative to the ball screen and ball screen coverage. Is that happening within practice?
Absolutely. You'll have guys that were going to get a higher usage rate based upon their ball screen reads. Last year, we had Milton Matthews. He transferred to Eastern Tennessee. I had him for 2 years NAI. He struggled in the ball screens. But this year, Florida A&M, he was really good in practice. He really wanted to get better. Game time's come. I'm like, we got to put him in more reads. We got to put him in more 77 action, some more five out, 51 delay, whatever we're calling. We got to get him to some of this quick stuff, not just to shoot the ball, but to get into it and make reads. It makes guys better, makes teams better, and then it makes guys want more opportunity to get the ball. And so I liked it. I loved it with our guys. It's something that we're really going to focus on here at Grambling early on in the process. I think we got to it too late last year. And so at Grambling, I really want to start it this summer.
I love it. Great way to be able to play. And I can see the NBA influences throughout what you're doing as well. And that must connect with the player. So connect with us a little bit to how you do film. I know film is really important. You've referenced it a few times relative to utilizing film and statistics in player development specifically.
So first, we're daily meet for 10 minutes before. We cannot talk too long. Okay. They're not listening to you. They live in a world, a 30-second world. We didn't grow up in that world, but now we all live in it too. We're doing the same thing. And so really trying to identify some key things for them in that 10-minute standpoint, not talk too much. It's probably something that I got to develop on and continue to get better at. But 10 minutes. We're in there for 10 minutes. Most of the time we're going to go over the programming of the day. It also depends on the week. So we do the week like football because we're playing Saturday and Monday in conference. So you get in there on Tuesday, so Tuesdays are off day. You play Saturday and Monday, Tuesdays are off day. You get in there Wednesday. First thing you have is the film video recap of the weekend. So always start with positives, try to show some highlight plays, good reads, unselfish plays, maybe unscripted plays, help the helper, things that happen that guys aren't going to get noticed for that maybe we didn't see in real time. Effort plays that we see on tape, then going to what we have to get better at. We keep that very short because we're going to do it when we get on the court anyway. And nobody likes to get told they stink on film. Like it's especially in front of their peers, 15 guys. It's something you got to stay away from. I think it's much better from a personal film sessions with guys. We get that on Wednesday. And then every other day, Thursday, Friday, Thursday, we're in the full scout for Saturday. Friday, you're back in the full scout for Saturday and Monday. And so you're taking those small individual films from guys, certain tendencies. We'll take the top three plays that we think. These are the top three actions that we're going to go up against. Top three things we're going to deal with based on out of bounds. Top two things for end of the game situations. And really have that so they can see it, not memorize it, but just really see it. And then we move down to the floor where we get to some more film. And we do film on each and every segment that we do. So, say practice is at 7 o'clock or whatever, 7 to 7:20. 7:20 to 7:23, ball screen film. Then 7:33 to 7:36, five out new play film. So they'll get to see the two new plays on the big screen right there, boom, boom, go on the court and kind of do it. And so we're always showing them things to try to give them the advantage. And then guys are on the side. Everybody complains about guys being on the side, not paying attention. They're standing there. Kids have a bunch of, get them on the TV. So I get them on the screen now. So one of the coaches, we got four or five coaches, not everybody talking. So one of the coaches is by the TV. He's running them through what they're about to go through on the court. So when they come on, you know what you're doing? Yes, boom. It flows a little faster. So try to utilize it a lot, maybe too much, but we want to make sure that we are always showing them, teaching them, developing them, holding them accountable, and letting them see it on a daily basis. So when they go to the next, maybe they go up to a Power Four, they go up to a higher mid-major, or they go pro overseas, that they're not overwhelmed with that type of data.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know, the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable, and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach, we've talked about relationships and the importance of them. I know something else that's important for you, and you can talk about a little bit more, is the difference between transactional and transformational and these type of relationships and the way that you coach. Can you go a little bit deeper in terms of transactional relationships in your program?
I think you really got to identify with each player because each player might have a different viewpoint on how they want their relationship to go. Early on as a young coach, I wanted every relationship that I had to be a transformational one, to go to your wedding, to be to, but you have to understand in relationships, it really is a two-way street. So you have to figure out what the player really wants out of this relationship with their coach. Once you identify that, I think it makes it so much easier for everybody else. Something that I struggle with early on in my career, and I would probably say the middle of my career too. And I'm still evolving on and trying to get better because in my true core, I do want to be involved with every single player. But you have to understand the times that we're in. And so from a transactional standpoint, I mean, it's business. So it's still at the end of the day, business. I think coaches have said for years, well, this is a business. Now it really is a business for everybody. So you have to make sure you respect it, respect that for the players. I think it helps the players as well in terms of understanding what they have to do and the effort level they have to give now that we're doing this thing on a transactional basis. To me, it's all about the understanding of where the player wants to go because I am on the mindset that this is player first. This is just my mindset of how things go. And so understanding where that player is, what their needs are, and how they would like this to go is how I start things off with them. Because as the head coach, everybody's going to hate you. Let's just understand. 15 years of doing this, at some point in time, everybody in the program is star players mad that you're on them. Second tier players mad because he's not the star player. The guy come off the bench is mad he's not starting. The guy's not playing is mad he's not coming off the bench. So everybody's going to have a problem at some point. But understanding each player and how they work and how they think and what they want to do and their goals and what they're pursuing can help those relationships merge better.
Coach, I'm curious, like when we think about transactional and we think about the new state of basketball in college, and I'm wondering, like, does it impact that much when you coach players on from a basketball perspective, film on the court, helping them try and get better, help the team succeed? Does the transactional relationship change that much?
First, I'm going to say it's only been a year on the Division I level, so I don't have enough data to go back with 13, 14 years on the NAI level. I can say this, the trust is different, though. I will say that. I do fully believe when you have a relationship that is transformational, that the downtimes can be brought up. And in transactional, those downtimes can be really low, and it's hard to get them back to the highest of high. I think when that relationship is really tight, you can have ebb and flows. It's almost like a marriage. You can go down really bad, you can come back up to be really high. But when you're dealing with transactional, it's like a heightened level. You can't get past, this is how high this thing is going to go. Now you can get low, you can get super low, but it's not going to get past this type of height. And I think when you got to have so much trust to win a championship, it does matter. Just in terms of maybe we change the game plan on the fly. I've been talking to you about all this film and we're going to do this and do this. If it's not working after 12 and a half minutes and we're down by 20, I got to flip it. And a transformational guy might trust me because he believes in me. Transactional guy might say, I don't know if he knows what he's doing because we went through this all week for, and now all of a sudden he wants to change in 12 minutes. So that's where you can get a little tricky with it, is on the trust factor. And if you want to win a championship, your team has to have the utmost of trust in each other.
It's a fascinating time for all of you going through this in terms of experiencing these things. And that was a really thoughtful answer. I hadn't thought about some of those things in that way. So it's going to be fascinating. I know another thing that you've done successfully throughout your career is adapting to the environments that you've been in. So talk to us about the value of being adaptable as a coach.
I think you really take on the personality of your school. I think a lot of coaches just keep their same, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is how I do it. I think the standard always is really good. It's good to have you. Everybody has to have their own standards and how they move, run their programs. But every school is very different. Washington at Venice was a, we're going to grind it out. We really don't have that many resources, but we're going to do whatever we can to really make this happen. St. Thomas was Miami. So having to sell Miami is very different than having to sell the other locations that I've been a full-time coach at. So understanding what that was going into that, whether that was donors with certain people or visits on the beach, it was a very different experience. And having to sell Miami was not hard. It was fun, but it was just different. And Florida A&M, great history, a history of a program, and then trying to build it back to get it to where it needed to be. And then now at Grambling, a historically known program that everybody knows about, Grambling, about HBCUs. So, you have to really find the niche about your school. Is your school a glitz and glamour school? Is your school a rough and tough school? How does that adapt to the players that you recruit? There's some players that I could have recruited at St. Thomas that I probably couldn't have recruited at Washington and Venice. And so, understanding the type of player that you need, the assistant coaches that work with you, understanding the type of grit that you need for certain situations, I think that adaptability really helps in understanding and probably growing your career and being good at wherever you go. I'm trying to make it better than it is.
I love the phrasing you shared with me, which is get it out of the mud environments. What does that mean for coaches that are listening?
Getting out the mud environment, it's really a no excuses environment. Like, I have done whatever it takes wherever I have been. I was washing jerseys at a Division I school. So it does not at some point in time. So if it has to be done, get it done. I think, especially young coaches, we do a lot of complaining about opportunities that we might not have, especially if you're coming from the lower level and you're trying to break in. We don't have this. I did it as well. I did it for years. I don't have this. I don't have that. But it doesn't matter. You still got to try to beat them. So that mentality really is coming down to doing whatever you have to do where you are to get the results you really need to get. And that might be sweeping the floor. That might be organizing the jerseys. That might be moving guys into the dorm. Some coaches move people into the dorm for photo ops, and some are really like out there picking up bags and getting it and moving them in and helping them clean. And that really mentality that I'm not going to be stopped no matter what is really that getting out of the mud mentality. And I don't know where I'll be in 25 years or 65, but I'm sure I'll still be in there trying to do whatever I can to make sure I can get things happening as fast as I can. So that mentality has helped me. It's helped me tremendously over the last 15 years, and I continue to do it here at Grambling.
I'm sure you will. And maybe since you're new to the job there, take us through. What does a coach do in his first day, first 5 days, first 10 days after the press conference? You get the job. What's next for Patrick?
On the phone with recruits, man, I took a Sprinter van back to the airport after the press conference, and now I'm trying to re-recruit all the guys that I was recruiting to Florida A&M. to see if they would want to come to Grambling. We've pretty much, and I've been here on the ground running now for almost 6 or 7 weeks, and my whole focus has been roster building. I don't think there's anything more important than the people you have in your building. So it was straight roster building from the jump. I have not even looked for a place to live. I have not, I've looked at maybe, I've barely looked. When I say looked like I've put something online, but I haven't been inside of a place to live yet because nothing matters until I get the 13 to 15 guys I need to complete this roster. And then as a Division I coach, you're going to get 1,000 phone calls about jobs. And so you have to be very transparent about it. I'm a guy that is very been open to helping young coaches and helping guys that might have been on the same level as me, whether I was AI or D2, really building those relationships with those guys. And so those are conversations you have to have as well. Like, I'm not the guy to just say, I'm not talking to you. I already have my guys. There was a lot of conversations that I had to have for me to open it up and give people the opportunity to see if it was going to sway my decision. We all have different viewpoints when it comes to staffing. The way I view mine is really using, it's like players. If you're bringing them in this portal era of players and I'm bringing in coaches and trying to get them better, and then I'm trying to help them get a better opportunity. That might be at a Power Four, that might be a non-basketball job, but really development to me is key when it comes to your staff as well. We had two guys last year. One went to the Southland and one, I think they both went to, and one went to the Sun Belt Conference that were on my staff. Guys were like, why'd those guys leave? I wanted them to leave. They got more money. They got a great opportunity with me. They can grow. And 5, 6 years down the line, we can get back together possibly. I think with that mentality, with coaching has helped me as well, because the guys know that I'm in it for them. The players know I'm in it for them. I want to do well, but it's not just about me.
When it comes to those type of coaches seeking jobs and you getting that type of solicitation from coaches, what are some things that can help filter the list, for example, from no chance to possibly to intriguing, maybe? What are some of the things maybe for coaches that are out there thinking about future possibilities and jobs?
I think it's all about spots. Like, you want certain spots for certain people. Now, you might be the best person for a different spot, but you might not be the best person for this spot. For instance, we have an offensive coordinator, a decent defensive coordinator, an ops, a GM, and then you have your wild card, which is probably going to be player development, things like that for us. So you might be a great person who really could have helped me on the offensive end, but you might not be the guy that we need for player development and or video coordinator. So understanding what type of person that you're looking for in that spot is key. You had one spot that I'm filling now, but you have some high level guys, but they might not fit that spot, where it might be a younger guy who might fit that spot. I think that's the hardest thing. I didn't know when I was trying to get into the Division I level or even looking at assistant jobs. A lot of these things are formulated in the head coach's head for he's team building as well. Like, you don't want to get 10 shooters. Building a coaching staff is like building a roster, trying to get the best people to do their best job that's going to flow together to keep the engine running. Those are the things when you first get a job, that's all about. It's about staff building for me, and then roster building. Like anything else, it's just about people. And once you get those people, then everything else, basketball wise, those concepts and everything else can come on pretty easy as long as you have the right people.
When you finally do get your coaching staff and your roster, and we're all thinking about a place to live for you now, but when you finally get all that together and you get on the floor with your team, how is Patrick starting the first practice? What are the things you're doing? Are you doing those ball screen reads, or what are we doing to start establishing the basketball culture and the program culture?
Yeah, 2-on-2 actions. So we're going to go right into 2-on-2 actions. So we did, but we do a lot of it for development, just for shots early. A lot of guys, I'm going to go back to look at your 3-point field goal percentage, where you got your shots from, watch your synergy, look at your data. But now we're going to see how you shoot on the move. How are you in actions? So we usually get that actions to get those terminologies going quickly. It's much easier to work on floor spacing and things like that when you have your terminology already ready to go and guys aren't looking at each other. Do I pass? What do I do next? So yes, we're immediately starting the two-man actions and also starting in the two-man actions on defense. So are we switching it? Are we hedging it? Are we stunning it? Are we trapping it? Those two-man actions are our fundamental base and where everything really starts from us as a team. And then it helps with your communication as well, as you communicate those actions with each other.
Is that guided live? What are we doing initially? Is it just we're putting them in the situation, then they get to play out of the situation? Is that what's happening before you're
So,
coaching?
and this will happens with 2-on-0. So you're 2-on-0 and you're doing shooting drills. And so let's say we're going to go on the right slot and right corner. We're going to work grenade action. So we're going to dribble down, pitch it back, and then shoot the three there. So you two are on a team together versus these two guys on a team on the left side. And so you guys are going to get 20 shots, 10 each of you guys. We're going to have a competition to see who makes the best shots. And you can't BS this. So if you come off and you just do a regular DHO instead of getting to a pitch more grenade, it doesn't count. If you don't call for the grenade or tell the guy what you're doing, it doesn't count. If you don't call for the shadow or ghost screen, it doesn't count. Your footwork isn't correct. So we try to be very detail-oriented on those things, get that terminology together, 2-on-0. Then off that 2-on-0, now we can play against the other team. Now it's 2-on-2. You can use these two actions. You can shadow it, you can pitch it. You also can just go 1-on-1 if they're sleeping and they're trying to just cheat, which guys do a lot early on. So we work on a lot of footwork on defense in terms of funneling guys into the screen, not getting beat on rejects, fighting over the top, not just switching without physical contact. So those things are able to be mirrored 2-on-2 as you start out. And then we get on to 3-on-0 with ball screens using the 5-man. And then this year we're going to do a lot of, because we have a five who can put the ball on the floor and shoot, a lot of inverted 5-1 ball screens, 5-2 ball screens, where he can then make the read to get downhill, shoot the ball, or make the short one. But which I'm really, that's like the thing I'm so excited about.
That's
The kid,
fun.
I'm just, people are like, the kid, I'm like, this kid with what we're doing is going to be really difficult for people as long as he's able to learn, listen, get better, and stay healthy. And he's a great kid, so I'm really excited about him.
I can see you spark up just being excited about that. That's so cool. But what also strikes me is the simplicity in what you're talking about, the 2-on-2 actions is essentially, I'm assuming just like the NBA, the majority of possessions in the college game, do you play against a ball screen of some kind?
Absolutely.
So it makes sense to basically start with the end in mind in some way that in every possession, you're going to play against a ball screen in some way. And if you're really good at that point of the ball screen, then you're going to be better in the rest of the concepts as well. It strikes me as a simple way to be able to approach kind of development, both individually and as a team.
Yeah, and guys love it. Like, guys want to get better in the ball screens. Like, that's where they want to get better. They don't want to run plays. They don't want to do misdirection. They don't care about baseline out of bounds. They really don't want to box out. They want to be able to guard their man 1-on-1 on a prideful level, and they want to be able to score and make reads in the ball screen. So those are probably the three things that players want to do nowadays.
And did you start this from that perspective of saying, what would the players want? What would the players enjoy? Is that a foundation of kind of how you came to this conclusion?
Absolutely not. I was trying to win.
Okay.
We broke it down. We were playing against Pine Bluff last year. We were 0-3 in the league. And I thought that their point guard was just the best in terms of reading ball screens. So we really broke it down. And we thought the guys liked it, and we thought that they were getting better from it. And this is mid-January. And once we did that with the film, it really helped us. Now, in years before, yeah, I did 3-on-0 and some 2-on-0 stuff early on, but not to the magnitude level that we do it now in terms of charting it and then letting guys know. I'm a guy who's going to let guys know what it is. Like, stat sheet is up. Go with that film and that 10-minute film. Hey, this is the weekend. This is our cue stats from the weekend recap. Good. 17 is Rod. You had 13 assists, 4 turnovers. Bad. You shot 1 for 6 from 3 in the 2 games. We're going to work on that. You're going to get better at that. So I always show them. I don't want to hide it from them. It's out there. Other people are looking at it. It's not a reason to get discouraged. It's a reason to get better and work harder and know what you got to do. And so we really try to educate our guys on the numbers-based system, because if you want to go to the NBA, which every kid in college wants to go to the NBA, or you want to go to high-level Europe, they're going to sit you down and say, hey, your efficiency rating is just not high enough. That's why you're not playing. They're going to tell you exactly what it is. You know, the higher your efficiency rating is, the better you're going to be, the more money you're going to earn, and the higher league you're going to play.
Born out of necessity, became something that connects for you. And now I think it connects for a lot of people in terms of how we approach things. Can you bring it full picture for us a little bit and say, how do you bring these 2-on-2, 2-on-0 actions into the whole? How do you connect them to the whole?
Absolutely. So I got this from Shaka Smart. They did some things with their ball screens with different calls for an inside ball screen and an outside ball screen. So I went to his practice. One thing I did at NAI was I went to as many Division I practices as I could, because I knew nobody cared. I wasn't going to play them. And I was trying to connect and learn and meet people. So on my own dime, flying to Marquette, rest in peace, Amir, flying to the South Florida to spend time with Amir and talk about culture, build culture building, team play. With Shaka, I was fascinated how they did these ball screens. They're very good in terms of get action. So our bigs kind of have three calls. I don't want to give them all out because I don't want to put Shaka on blast. Put inside screen, outside screen, and then, of course, get. Our bigs now can play tap as well if they would like to. We don't really call it as much for them rather than set those hard screens. So the bigs have their three or four calls. The guards have their three or four calls. And they're able to communicate it out. So we'll go 2-on-2 to start with just guards. Then we'll go 3-on-0, then 3-on-3 with bigs and guards. Then we'll take that 3-on-3 and go right to 5-on-5. I'm away from 4-on-4. A 4-on-4 is a touchy subject for everybody. I just don't like the rotations off. I just don't think they're realistic. I'd rather load you like slot, corner, 5-out ball screen. Are they going to hedge from that same side? Are they going to help from that same side corner? Or are they going to stay and help from the opposite corner? I'd rather do that than to go 4-on-4 where you can, the floor looks a lot more spaced. It just, I've in my experience, I like 3-on-3 moving to 5-on-5. And so I'll let them play. Just go up and down court. You got 15 seconds, figure it out, talk. You got these five actions. So they'll go. Of course, at first they're like throwing the ball out of bounds, like keep running into each other. It's ugly. It can get ugly at first, but after time, it gets a lot better. And so the main thing is the communication piece, because I think that's where a lot of teams struggle early, especially us last year. How fast can you get guys talking with each other? And when it's not pass the ball or ball, real conversations, real reads, real discussions. So they're able to understand what the other team is doing and then what they're doing and what they have to do to get better in it.
Coach, this is elite. Awesome stuff sharing here. Great things to think about for all of us as coaches. And let's just reflect on a little bit, like NIA to here, small college to here. Your journey has been a long one in a way, but man, you've got to be pretty excited to be where you're at.
Definitely excited. I just came in my 15th year. I started, I was 26 as a head coach, didn't know what I was doing, but
you said yes was the most important thing though, coach. And then you figured it out.
Yeah. I tell my assistant coaches this all the time, whether you know it or not, the players better believe you though. So you better say it with your chest. And so that was probably me early on. And then we had a lot of success early. And so just the journey of being in NAI, so many ridiculous coaches and so many relationships I have that I've learned. Those are guys that I call back now about their guys. Or a guy in their league. Is this guy good enough? There's so many coaches in the NAI that are better than me right now that just I need an opportunity to get to the Division I level. And so it's a humbling experience. I wouldn't change any of it. Always had that underdog in me. And it's really a chip on my shoulder that now has become like a massive gash that just is going to stay on there for the rest of my career. I have to build it at each place that we're blessed to work at. So just big love to everybody on small college, and D2, D3. There's so many names and so many different people that I don't want to even start naming them. But there are some elite level coaches out there that I'll never play while I'm a low major college basketball head coach. I'll tell you that right now, just because I know how good they are. So it's a great level. I think coaches right now, a lot of guys get out of school, like, I want to immediately go to be a GA on Division I level. I might want to look at the NAI. Look at Division 3, look at Division 2, because you're really going to be able to coach. You don't have that many resources. So you're going to be able to coach. I have student assistants now that is an assistant coach for Georgetown women's basketball. And he was a student assistant for me. And he was able to excel in no time. And so there's a bunch of different guys out there in the coaching tree that I'm excited about. And I think one thing for me, it's always about just that community of coaches and just building it down. It can be a very tough thing as a younger coach trying to understand how to navigate the relationships in this space, in this business. It can be very scary. For me, it was extremely scary early on. But putting yourself out there, jumping out there, looking to help people and bring people along with you, to me, is really the key. And I hope all of us keep calling myself young. I'm 41 now. I'm getting up here.
You're still young.
Bringing those guys with you. And making that basketball community one where we all feel valued, we all feel together, and the growth is there. I tell the young NAI coaches, DT coaches, fat dogs, not starving. There's a lot of guys out there making a lot of money, been doing this a long time. They might not be starving anymore. It's your turn to get up here and just try to scrape the plate. I really empower those guys. Don't let anybody put any limits on your life or your dreams or what they think you can do. It's up to you, your work ethic and your relationship with God, your family to get you where you need to be. So blessed to be at Grambling. Looking forward to get things moving here and really have a really successful first season.
We're blessed to have you on sharing with us, and thank you for that. That was beautiful. And Patrick, we cannot thank you enough for sharing the game with us.
Thank you very much for having me. Big fan of the show. Excited to be here, and thank you for everything.